Welcome to Indie Media on Air. This is Chris Burnett with KillRadio.org, and I'm in studio with Steven Starr from Freenet Project.
Hey there.
And today we have some very special guests that we are going to be talking to in regards to Reclaim the Commons and the movement surrounding the biotech industry and their upcoming conference in San Francisco and the G8 in Georgia. Luke and Starhawk will be our guests today. Luke is an activist from the UK and the author of Genetic Engineering, Food and Our Environment, and a member of the Genetic Engineering Action Network. Since 1997, he has been working with environmental, social justice, and farming groups around the world, focusing on grassroots resistance to genetic engineering, patents on life, and global economic institutions such as the WTO and World Bank. Starhawk is an activist organizer and author of Webs of Power, Notes from the Global Uprising, and 8 other books on feminism, politics, and earth-based spirituality. She teaches earth activist trainings that combine permaculture design and activist skills and works with the Rant Trainers Collective. Welcome, Luke and Starhawk. You there?
Hi.
Hi, yeah.
Great. I just also want to extend a special invitation to Starhawk, and I just wanted to say I'm very inspired by many of your writings that I've read that you've put out after many of the global gatherings, especially the one about Miami. So welcome.
Oh, thank you.
So to get started, I'd like to maybe read a passage from the Reclaim the Commons website, and I think it'll give people some background on what this topic is about. So I'm going to start off with that. The biotechnology industry is a prime example of how global corporations are eroding democracy, threatening our health and environment, and concentrating control of our food and resources in the hands of a few profit-driven companies. With almost no public debate, over 100 million acres of genetically engineered crops are planted each year in the United States. That's almost 70% of the world's GE crops. Once released into the environment, these GE life forms can't be recalled, and there's no way to predict their effects on our bodies, ecosystems, and future. Gambling with the future of human and environmental health is gravely affecting food sovereignty throughout the world, dramatically increasing the risks of biowarfare and further entrenching the health-for-profit system with the creation of biopharmaceuticals that are grown in GE plants and animals. Already, these artificial life forms have contaminated seeds and crops that have been cultivated over thousands of years. And while our tax dollars subsidize corporations developing anti-aging drugs and biological weapons, these same companies deny affordable drugs to people in desperate need of medical relief. So with that as a background, why don't you start off with what is Reclaim the Commons and what are the commons?
Well, the commons are all of those things that are too important, too vital to life, too precious, too beautiful to be privatized, to become arenas of profit-making. There are things like air, water, our genetic heritage, our cultural heritage, the integrity of the biosphere, you know, the biodiversity of life, all of those things, the things that really sustain life and human culture. And one of the things we're saying in this mobilization is that we don't want to just focus just on one particular issue. We want to focus on the underlying overarching frame that connects all the issues. And that is the frame of the commons, taking back those things that we all need that should belong to nobody or belong to everybody.
So the public versus private issues that you're describing probably highlighted in the Bio 2004 meeting. Who's meeting there? Why should we be concerned with this meeting? What is it all about for our listeners?
These companies are the corporations that are driving the health-for-profit pharmaceutical industry. They're also the companies pursuing the genetic engineering of food crops, the genetic engineering of animals, the genetic engineering of trees, and the genetic engineering of humans. So it includes the big chemical companies like Dow and Monsanto, and also companies that have interests that span chemicals and right the way into sort of genetic engineering and medicine. And you know, when you have a model of healthcare that's designed for profit, of course there's a sort of not so hidden investment in keeping people ill, because that's how you make your money. And it's actually very similar, the sort of pharmaceutical model of healthcare to the industrial agriculture model of controlling insect pests and so on. It's like bombard it with chemicals until you kill it. That's pretty much the idea.
Just a question on that. If at the conference there are you just described a list of multinationals, global corporate concerns, who ostensibly is there representing, if you will, the people?
Oh, there isn't anyone who is there to ostensibly represent the people. These are the corporations that are patenting our genetic heritage. Of the 30,000 genes now believed to be in the human genome, about 1,000 of those already have corporate patents on them. So these are corporations that are patenting as their own inventions genes that belong to you and I, the umbilical cord cell genes, the bone marrow stem cell genes, and the genes of the plants and animals as well. I mean, these are corporations that are getting exclusive patent rights to the entire gene pool of indigenous peoples. These are corporations that are developing animals genetically engineered to be drug factories, goats engineered with genes taken from spiders so they can be milked for the spider silk protein, the stuff that spiders' webs are made out of. These are corporations that are fighting countries in the global south who are trying to produce cheap generic versions of AIDS drugs. These are the corporations that are requesting that the British and the United States governments force these countries to abandon their plans to produce cheap AIDS drugs. And why are they needing to produce cheap AIDS drugs? Well, of course, because they've got the problems of AIDS, but also because they're spending more on debt than they are on their entire health and education budgets, and they can't afford thousands and thousands of dollars a year for a single person's drug prescription, which these corporations want.
Let me try to tie it all together. I think we've all been hearing about the G8 protests happening in Georgia. Maybe you could connect the dots for us. What is the G8, and is there a relationship between what's happening up north at the biotech mobilization and what's happening in Georgia?
Well, we very much see these mobilizations as linked. The G8 is the annual meeting of the heads of state of the seven most industrialized countries in the world, plus Russia. You could say that the eight movers and shakers of the world scene. And at this meeting, they have the informal conversations and sort of set the agendas that they're going to pursue over the next year. And very much of the agenda that's set is the one of how do we make more agreements, how do we open up the world for corporate exploitation, how do we break down protections that have in the past kept countries from being wide open to corporate investment, corporate control. And corporate control over our lives is one of the big themes that we're working with. Biotech, in some ways, is one of the most blatant examples when we get into corporate control and ownership of the very genes themselves, but it's also only one example of a much larger system that we're all embedded in.
Going back to the statement on Reclaim, the commons.net, you talk about 70% of the world's GE crops being grown in the U.S., and you refer to biowarfare. Can you explain in detail maybe a little bit about what do you mean by that, and what's the background on that?
There's two aspects to this. One is that agricultural policy, and specifically an agricultural policy that encourages the use of patented, genetically engineered crops, is a weapon of warfare. Agricultural policy kills 25,000 people a day from hunger in a world which is already producing enough to feed 1.5 times the current world population with an adequate and nutritious diet. So in that sense, that is a kind of a bio-warfare, and especially when you see the kinds of things that are being developed by, for example, the United States Department of Agriculture, seeds that are genetically disabled so that the seed, just as it matures in the plant, is actually poisoned as a result of a sequence of genetic events, or seeds that are unable to grow, that have certain genetic traits that allow them to withstand disease, for example, switched off except with the application of trigger chemicals that come from the company that sell the seeds. So, again, these kinds of things, and these are being targeted to the poorest people in the world, the 1.4 billion farming households that depend on farm-saved seed. This is a weapon of war. But then there's another aspect of this, which is that the United States government has by far the most advanced biological weapons development in the world. You know, one of the ironies is that as the U.S. government was looking for non-existent biological weapons in Iraq and bombing people into the ground in the search for them, apparently, the U.S. State Department was actually re-sponsoring a bid to release a biological agent, a fusarium, in South America, ostensibly to target coca production, but it's a fusarium that will harm all kinds of other crops, and are currently using chemical weapons to spray in on villages all across regions of South America. And yes, these chemicals, produced by Monsanto, by the way, these chemicals do kill the coca crops, but they also kill the farmers' fields. They get sprayed on the children. They get sprayed on the people as they're working out in the fields. So the U.S. is actively involved in biological and chemical weapons deployment, and what it's doing in the guise of defensive research is developing highly dangerous pathogenic biological organisms. And there's huge amounts of money now being doled out all over the country to facilities that will set themselves up as very high-level biological weapons, very high-level contained biological weapons facilities, because in order to do defensive research, you need to produce the offensive organisms. So this is, of course, extremely dangerous. If there's some breach in the security, if there's an earthquake, you know, some problem where these organisms get out. I mean, these are really very dangerous organisms. So we shouldn't be going anywhere near them.
I want to back you up, if I could. And yeah. Starhawk, I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, maybe speaking directly into the phone. When you talk about toxic impact of these sprays being used in the global south for the eradication of coca, what happens to a child who is affected or directly in contact with these chemicals?
Well,
Luke, you want to take that?
Sure. I mean, well, the particular ingredient that they're using, glyphosate, has all kinds of different problems associated with it. People have been reporting sicknesses. In fact, in California, it's the third most commonly reported cause of pesticide-related poisonings amongst farm workers. So vomiting, depression, all kinds of other problems.
Maybe you can speak to the issue of sustainability or agricultural sustainability. I'm guessing that diversity is one of the biggest issues here. And that one of the motives for this GE engineering is that you can control these seeds, and Monsanto can control the patents and copyrights or whatever on these on this technology. Do we know what the effects are of this? I mean, has there been any evidence for, you know, showing that this kind of lack of diversity or this de-diversification has had on crops and or agricultural farming?
We've lost in the last 100 years 75% of the genetic diversity present in agriculture 100 years ago, primarily as a result of industrialized farming practices and bigger markets for for less and less diverse seed supply. And genetic engineering is perfectly designed to encourage the systems of monoculture that we know to be so destructive. And in fact, you know, genetic engineering and industrial agriculture is a perfect reflection of American mainstream culture, where monoculture is pursued on all kinds of levels. And that's one of the links, again, to the whole Reclaim the Commons thing. The theft of the global commons, what that means is that the replacement with a monocultural system that is essentially starving to death in terms of culture and in terms of spirit, and doing very well in terms of destroying things. Now, maybe you want to talk more about that, Star.
Well, I think our current agricultural approach, the industrialized agriculture, it's based on a model of the world that's really like agriculture is warfare. You know, you go in and you're growing a certain crop, and you see something you don't like, and basically you wipe it out of existence. And the more bugs appear, the more you try to wipe them out of existence, too. It's as if you were going off to battle rather than trying to grow something that might actually nurture people's health. To grow something that nurtures health, we have to have healthy soil, and we have to understand that growing food is about relationship. It's about the relationship of the seed to the plant. It's about a beneficial relationships between various kinds of plants and insects and animals and soil bacteria, so that we don't see anything, any particular crop as just a separate, isolated, you know, thing. We see it as part of this whole web of relationships. I mean, in a teaspoon of healthy soil, there's 600 million soil bacteria. There's 3 miles of fungal hyphae. There's millions and millions of other little organisms. And all of those things need to be present for the soil to really be alive and be healthy. And when it is, when it has that much diversity, it's very resilient to pests, to diseases, to fungal infections, because there's probably something around that's going to eat the thing that is bothering you. But when you take Roundup or you take these chemicals and wipe out all of that life, then you're left with a dead medium and you're growing a single kind of plant where they're all genetically identical. You get a bug or you get a disease, and that disease can spread from plant to plant, and there's nothing, you know, to prevent it. Not only that, but pesticides haven't been effective in keeping pests off of our food. We actually are suffering more crop loss to insects now than we were in the 1940s. And part of the reason is, again, that insects are part of a web of relationships, and they evolve and they change. And the insects that eat our food are sort of the herbivores of the insect world, and they tend to have the shorter lifespans, shorter spans between generations, and evolve very quickly. So they can very quickly evolve resistance to a pesticide. The beneficial insects that eat the ones that we tend to see as pests are the carnivores of the insect world, and they're like in the rest of the world, you know, you have a lot of deer and a few tigers, right? They're much more susceptible to being wiped out by the pesticides themselves, and they take longer to evolve, and there's fewer of them in relationship to the others, and so the pesticides have a disproportionate negative effect on them. So what we're saying is we want a world where we're not using a war metaphor in order to grow our food. We're using a life metaphor. And in that life metaphor, we're trying to create systems of complexity and diversity, systems in which all the different elements have beneficial relations with each other, and that when you achieve that kind of balance, you have abundance and you have resilience and you have health and you have life and you have a real kind of security.
I imagine that the biotech industry has spent millions of dollars on a public relations campaign for their vision for genetic engineering in food and medicine. Maybe you can explain what they hope to achieve, and then we can talk about what the response is to that.
In terms of this meeting specifically, what they hope to achieve, or in broader way, what they hope to achieve?
Well, how have they driven this madness forward in the public's mind? Why does the public accept these ideas so readily? What have they campaigned on? What basis?
Well, it's, you know, one of the things that's interesting in working in different countries on this issue is to see really how much different kinds of information people are exposed to in other countries that they just don't get in the United States. One example of this, there was a couple of journalists who were fired from Fox News after they refused to include false information in a documentary about Monsanto's genetically engineered growth hormone that's injected into dairy cows. And these journalists actually filed a lawsuit based on a whistleblower, you know, some kind of whistleblower law saying, look, you know, we were fired for refusing to lie. And in the end, in the Court of Appeals, despite the fact that previously the jury had unanimously awarded one of these journalists $400,000 in damages, in the Court of Appeals, the judge ruled that not only would she not be awarded those damages, but she would not she would actually have to pay huge court fines. And the reason being that there's no law in the United States that explicitly prohibits a network from broadcasting information that they know to be false. In other words, there's no law that prohibits a network from lying to the public. Therefore, there's no law that protects a journalist for refusing to lie to the public. And in fact, it goes worse than that. There are laws that mean you have to be extremely careful if you're going to, you know, say anything say anything nasty about a broccoli because you could have a corporation successfully suing you for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so people are exposed to different information in other countries. People are actually told what's been going on with some of these genetically engineered crops. People are more aware of the fact that, for example, the poorest countries in the world are the countries that have the strongest resistance to genetically engineered foods. They're not crying out for it. They're actually refusing the aid shipments of genetically engineered foods. And there's a huge public relations machine in this country trying to persuade people that genetic engineering is a wonderful thing and good for the environment and can reduce pesticides. In just one of the initiatives alone, the industry is spending $50 million a year persuading the American public that genetic engineering is a good thing.
So we have this mobilization taking place, and it's the beginning of something, we hope. What is the... How would you describe the mobilization? What makes it different from prior ones? And can you describe in some broad terms what are some of the events and actions that are being planned to raise consciousness and political action?
We're really working hard with this mobilization in our messaging, in what we put out, in the way we do our actions, to make clear to people not just what we're against, but also what we're for, that we're representing a really very basically radically different vision of the world than the vision that's put forth by the corporations. We represent a world of relationship, a world where those things that support and sustain our lives are things that we have a common interest in defending, protecting, figuring out how they can be fairly shared among people. We represent a worldview that's calling for a kind of democracy that's not just going and pressing a button every 4 years or so, but where people really have a voice in the day-to-day decisions that affect them. And we see that the kind of diversity that brings resilience in a natural system is also the kind of diversity that we need in our human cultures. So we have many different facets to this. We have a teach-in, the BioDev teach-in that's going to be going on from the 3rd through the 5th, where people can come and get informed about all of these issues. There's also a big peace march on the 5th opposing the war in Iraq and the occupation of Iraq that we'll be sending a contingent to. On the 6th, we're going to have a really, really free market in San Francisco in Union Square where everything will be free and given away for free. Just as a way of expanding our imagination about what the world could actually be like and how it might actually feel to live in a world where profit wasn't the major motivating force. On the 7th, we're having a day of racial justice to draw the connections between biotechnology and the larger issues of environmental racism, especially that are going on in the Bay Area locally and around this country. And we're going to draw some of the connections between the torture that we've seen happen in the prisons in Iraq and the torture that goes on in our own prisons here in the United States, the general oppression of imprisoning huge, huge numbers of our population, particularly people of color, and that also is a commons that's been stolen from us, the commons simply of freedom, the commons of our communities, the commons of being able to live in an environment where we can count on some sort of health and some sort of safety in our communities. And then on the 8th, which is also the day that the G8 begins meeting in Georgia, we're going to have a day of direct action at the conference, and some of us, at least, are going to attempt to disrupt and blockade the conference by creating a different kind of garden outside with the plants and the herbs and the living things that represent the alternative that we have to the kind of pseudoscience that they're practicing inside. And then on the 9th, we're doing a day of eco-actions where we're going to take some of the plants and some of this vision and make it real by starting the seeds of community gardens, of gardens in the streets in San Francisco, transformation of some of our concrete into organic life.
I'd like to remind listeners to take a look at reclaimthecommons.net for more information on a lot of the details and how to get involved, and also biodev.org, and there'll be plenty of information there to follow up on. Going back to the connection between the G8 meeting and the biotech industries conference in June, will there be discussions at the G8 that will address these policies, you know, in terms of patent rights for these corporations? And also, I want to touch on some of the examples that are actually taking place in different countries, say in the areas surrounding in Chiapas, where there's a lot of issues of biodiversity, as well as some of the examples that Monsanto has been involved with in trying to shut down farmers when they either use these crops or accidentally the crops blow into their farms. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Well, I mean, that last example, the most famous case of a farmer's right to save his own seed went to the Canadian Supreme Court, and we heard a judgment on that at the end of last week. And the Canadian Supreme Court ruled that this guy, Percy Schmeiser, who was being sued by Monsanto for allegedly, using Monsanto's seeds without a license, the court ruled that Monsanto does have the right to have their patented property protected, and that a patent on a gene extends to any life form then containing that gene. So think about that. A company gets a patent on a gene. That gene gets engineered into a crop. That gene then gets spread through the polluting action of that crop, through the spreading of the pollen from the genetically engineered crop to neighboring crops. It could even transfer through several different kinds of connection from one crop to another crop to another crop. And any life form containing that gene is then the property of Monsanto. That's the ruling that came down through the Canadian Supreme Court. This, of course, has a huge implication for farmers everywhere that save seed. And one of the other issues you referred to is the biopiracy, the theft of the genetic resources of life on this planet, because the countries that get referred to as the poorest countries in mainstream economic terms are the countries that are richest in terms of genetic diversity. Sort of tropical countries are home to about 95% of the world's biodiversity. An example of biopiracy, Costa Rica, which is believed to be home to about 7% of the world's biodiversity, it's an amazing place. Merck Pharmaceuticals signed an agreement with the Costa Rican government that gave Merck Pharmaceuticals access to all the plants, animals, and microorganisms in the Costa Rican rainforest, and so that they could develop any patented products as a result that, developments coming from those organisms. And in exchange for that, Merck Pharmaceuticals, being an extremely generous company, gave a Costa Rican conservation program about $1 million. Merck Pharmaceuticals, I think the year that agreement was signed, was worth about $8.6 billion. And their deal worked out at about $2 per species, I think. So these are the kind of things that are going on in the global south, the patenting of genetic resources, researchers posing as interested scientists when they actually work for corporations. So they go to a tribe and they're also very interested in the plants that tribe's been using to heal this disease or that problem. And then they take those plants or animals back to laboratories in the West and, using routine laboratory procedures, isolate active ingredients and patent them as their own inventions. And interestingly enough, the routine laboratory procedures that they use to isolate these ingredients are laboratory procedures that were developed out of publicly financed research in this country. So that's another sort of layer of what's going on. You've got corporations taking all the results of decades and decades of research that the public in this country paid for. They paid for the laboratory techniques. They paid for the development of the understanding. And what is now taking place is that these corporations are like parasites, just skimming it off the top. They're taking it for themselves. And we need to urgently resist this theft of the global commons. It's much harder to take things back once they've been stolen, than to protect them in the first place.
Luke, I'd like to make a suggestion. You're really on it, and we're about to take a break just for a moment. And I'd love to come back and have you give the listeners, you and Starhawk, give the listeners a look at what they can do to step up into this mobilization and participate. and get active. Now, you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, and you're listening to Indie on the Air with Chris Burnett and Stephen Starr. We're coming back in just a moment or two with an incredible discussion with Starhawk and Luke about reclaiming the commons, the San Francisco biotech and G8 mobilization that's taking place June 3rd through 9th up north in San Francisco. And there's lots more to talk about. So thanks a lot. We'll be right back.
This is Henry Slucky, co-host and co-producer since 1986 of Access Unlimited, the award-winning program that focuses on issues and concerns of people with disabilities, their families, friends, and professionals working in the field. Tune in from 3 to 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoons here on KPFK 90.7 FM as I am joined by my co-hosts and co-producers Jolie Mason and Sean Casey O'Brien to bring you this unique program of important news and features from this large community of people asserting our rights. We sing another little